we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
The less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, September the 21st, 2018. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here in the studio by my co-host, Sinead Sanders.
Hello.
And our guest co-host, Carol Davies.
Good afternoon.
Welcome, everyone. This show is brought to you by our sponsor, Edible Planet. Edible Planet is a Vancouver-based education campaign and TV series to teach people about the world's most powerful edible plants and the fascinating people who bring them to market. Food is the world's most powerful tool to change the wealth, end chronic illness, regreen the planet, and create lasting world peace today. Now is the time for a plant-based economy because on this big, beautiful, edible planet, the food we eat can change the world. So now on to today's show. As you have probably heard in the news, the impacts of Hurricane Florence in North Carolina have been devastating, ruining the lives of many. But what you don't hear much about in the mainstream media is the impact that natural disasters like this have on farmed animals. North Carolina is a leading state in factory farming, but there are no governmental measures in place to protect farmed animals to evacuate in such a disaster. As such, millions of animals have been left to drown or starve to death. For our first interview today, we have Robert Grillo on the show. He is the founder and director of the farmed animal advocacy organization Free From Harm, and he is here today to speak to us about the disaster and what we as humans can do to prevent such tragedies from occurring in the future. Then for our feature interview, we have Chris Delforce on the show. He is the director, writer, and editor of the brand new feature-length documentary film called Dominion. Dominion takes place in Australia, but is applicable to the whole world. This film explores and exposes the reality behind the six primary facets of human interaction with animals: companion animals, wildlife, scientific research, entertainment, clothing, and food. And it questions the morality and validity of our dominion over the animal kingdom. Perhaps the most inclusive documentary yet on the human exploitation of animals. This film is not to be missed, and it's next Wednesday, September the 26th, showing here in Vancouver. More on this later. This interview will air in 30 minutes. So today, September the 21st, is the International Day of Peace. And Sinead, you have some ideas to discuss with us about this.
Yeah, it is the International Day of Peace today, and if you look that up online, there's a whole website off the United Nations website. They say it's observed around the world every year on September the 21st. It was established in 1981 by unanimous United Nations resolution, and Peace Day provides a globally shared date for all humanity to commit to peace above all differences and to contribute to building a culture of peace. So how that relates to our show in so very many ways.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
tell us the ways, Sinead.
Yeah. Well, most people, if you ask, you know, do you believe in a culture of peace or a culture of violence, or people would choose peace over violence. So, you know, what if you could make the world a more peaceful place every single day just by choosing foods that aren't inherently violent? You know, you can. So
right. And I think we've been seeing a lot of this violence actually surfacing to the top, literally with the deaths of all these animals in Hurricane Florence, right? I mean, it really just brings out the violence that's actually hidden within these factory farm sheds that is normally just not within people's sphere of knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was thinking, we've had Will Tuttle on the show before, mm-hmm. and he's author of a book called The World Peace Diet. And in that book, he points out how universal spiritual principles are routinely ignored and violated, including all five of the Buddhist precepts against, number one, killing. Animals are killed by the billions every year. Number two, stealing. Animals have their babies stolen from them, as well as their milk and their eggs and their freedom. Committing sexual violence or misconduct. Animals are sexually abused. They are forcibly inseminated, and their babies are stolen afterward. Deception, forcing drugs on others. Animals are forced to take antibiotics, drugs, hormones, and everything just to survive the conditions that we force them into when we farm them.
So if we really want to live a peaceful lifestyle, I always say that peace begins on your plate.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good thing to keep in mind. We can all do something to make the world a little less violent.
So remember, today, September 21st, it's the International Day of Peace. And thank you for sharing your ideas, Sinead.
Out and About in Canada invites listeners to tune in every Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m. out of Vancouver and all across the nation. Each week, we look at the LGBTQ world in Canada. A delicious and nutritious mix of interviews, music, and listening. Out and About in Canada, every Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m. on CFRO 100.5 FM Co-op Radio.
And now for some events. We've got lots of them coming up. I'll start with one that we've already mentioned. You'll hear more about later in the show. But Wednesday, September 26th at UBC Robson Square, the premiere of the documentary, the Vancouver premiere of the documentary called Dominion, groundbreaking Australian documentary exposing the dark underbelly of modern agriculture through drones and hidden and handheld cameras. There will be a panel discussion following the screening. This is 7 to 10 p.m. Wednesday, September 26th at UBC Robson Square. And stick around for an interview with the director later in the show. Another event coming up, Wednesday, October 3rd, Zoo Check presents Exotic Pets in Canada. Hundreds of thousands of exotic animals are kept as companions in Canada, and they come with a variety of animal welfare problems and pose significant human health and safety risks as well as environmental concerns. So governments and the various agencies that enforce wild animal laws and those who are rescuing and rehabilitating exotic pets are struggling to address these issues. So this is a workshop, the Exotic Pets in Canada workshop. It's being led by experts in the field and is a must for anyone in animal control, in animal studies, in law enforcement, public health, and wildlife conservation, you name it. So again, this is Wednesday, October 3rd. It's an all-day workshop, 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. at the Harbour Centre downtown. Admission is free, RSVP is required, and you can learn more at zoocheck.com, rather. And we have a lot of opportunities for eating a lot of delicious plant-based food coming up. So it's going to be a good couple weeks. Starting with this Sunday, September the 23rd, in East Vancouver, it is VegFest Vancouver miniature version. Join for a market-style vegan food festival featuring 23 of BC's best plant-based vendors. It's a one-stop shop for the most beloved animal-free products in town. Rain or shine, although it is supposed to be sunny by Sunday, it'll be an amazing event with live music, beer, and all of your favorite foods, including plant-based butchers, bakers, cheesemakers. I think there might even be candlestick makers.
Are you talking about this weekend?
Yeah, this weekend.
I want to go to that.
Sunday, September 23rd. Oh. That's going to be on East 4th, just off Main Street. And that's 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. But if you can't make it to that one on Main Street this Sunday, there is another Veg Fest this Thursday in North Vancouver. Thursday, September 27th is the first ever Capilano Veg Fest. Like the mini Vancouver Veg Fest, this features 20 of Vancouver's favorite plant-based food vendors. In addition to food, this event offers info about cruelty-free free products and services, and there will also be 10 presentations throughout the day on intriguing topics such as how the animal farming industry markets itself, what it's like to be a professional vegan athlete, and more. So this is a free event, 11:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Capilano University's Birch Building. And back in East Vancouver, we have one more vegan market food festival thing. They're just popping up everywhere now. Sunday, crazy. September 30th. Back in East Van, off East Hastings this time, the first ever vegan marketplace at the Waldorf. Yet another event celebrating the wide variety of animal-free options we have in BC. This will feature food, goods, services, giveaways, and lots more. Unlike the first two events, this event is not free, but for admission, all they're asking is donations of canned goods, clothing, pet food, or donations. They're all going to the Happy Herd Farm Sanctuary. So there you go. Sunday, September 30th from noon until 5 p.m. at the Waldorf Hotel on East Hastings, just off McLean Drive. So whether you're a vegan or a carnist in North Van or East Van, you've got options. Catch an animal-free food festival this Sunday, September 23rd at 4th and Main, Thursday the 27th at Capilano University, or the vegan marketplace Sunday, September 30th at the Waldorf.
And I need to do a quick announcement for an event that I help with
every year.
The annual Compassionate Vegan Thanksgiving Potluck Celebration. That is confirmed. It's happening Monday, October the 8th. New location this year. We're teaming up with the Vegans of UBC, and we have the Great Hall booked at the AMS Nest at the Student Union Building at UBC. It seats up to 600 people, so please come and enjoy food. It's going to be great. More info is on our Facebook page at Animal Voices Vancouver.
Excellent. Thanks, Allison.
Yes, thanks so much for those events. So for our first interview today, we welcome back Robert Grillo on the show. He is the founder and director of the organization Free From Harm, a nonprofit promoting farmed animal rescue, education, and advocacy. As Hurricane Florence drops torrential rains on North Carolina this week, people are evacuating, many leaving behind their farmed animals or backyard hens. As of this Tuesday, at least 3.4 million chickens and turkeys and 5,500 pigs have been killed by the storm. Robert is here today to give us some perspective on the devastation of the hurricane and how this tragedy could all be avoided in the future. Hi, Robert. Welcome back to the Animal Voices show.
Hi, Allison. Thanks for having me back.
Yes, well, thank you. Thank you for coming on the show to speak about this very important issue. Can you paint for us a picture of the horrifying situation that each species of these farmed animals would have found themselves in during a hurricane?
Yeah, it's beyond comprehension, really. You see the some drone footage, and we've seen some drone footage from people, from some of the rescuers on boats as well, and they're trying to give us a picture, a glimpse of what it could be like, but the scale of it is really hard to kind of get a realistic picture of. We can only really get a glimpse of the scale, I think, of what's really happening. And I think when all is said and done, after several weeks or months, a proper assessment could be done, and they can estimate how many animals suffered and died and drowned or in the floods. But it's still, like, it's really hard to even put numbers to it now, and it's overwhelming, really.
I know just the photos that I've been seeing being documented by people who I know on Facebook has just been, it's been horrifying seeing all of these pigs that are just overturned, and they've flooded out of their factory farm sheds, and it's just such a horrifying thought. Now, Carol has a question for you here.
Yeah, I'm understanding,
sure,
that the farmers are evacuating their companion animals, and yet they abandon their farmed animals. And those farmed animals aren't offered any legal protections or covered by any evacuation plans by the government. Is that correct? Can you speak to that?
It varies state by state. But certainly, the animals in question that are simply, you know, resources. They have very little legal protection on a federal level, on a state level. And, of course, in states like North Carolina, and I guess the same could be said for the state I'm in, which is Illinois, where industrial farming has, you know, quite a presence, developed industry, that, you know, they're really good at lobbying our government in their favor. So, you know, and especially under the Trump era, you can only imagine that deregulation, that the industry loved to say it was its best police force and that they could police themselves better than the government could. And now that's on steroids, you know, in the Trump era, because, everything's about deregulation. So, unfortunately, I think the extent to which these farms value their animals is the extent to which they are economic losses. So that means that the equipment that is insured by their policies and the animals have about equal value. They're basically, you know, as valuable to them as inanimate objects.
Right. Sinead has,
in some cases, less.
Thank you. Sinead has a question for you here, Robert.
Yeah, hi there. I was wondering what the rescue effort looks like currently for these animals who have been left to starve or drown.
Yeah, that's a great question. One of the people that works with us for Free From Harm, she's an activist and an author and an editor for the Free From Harm website. Her name is Ashley Katz, and she lives in Asheville and has been working with a rescue, search and rescue team down there throughout the state, contacting as many sanctuaries and shelters that she can to determine how many animals that they could rescue. And she's brought forth to me some pretty harrowing stories. One of them that stands out is the rescue of a fawn. On top, that was trapped, you know, found at the top of a factory farm, of a castle. I think it was an egg factory, and was just on top of this structure. And some people, you know, rescuers were able to rescue this fawn, but who knows, you know, how long he or she was up there, and was very sick and terrified. And so that story really, really, you know, pulls at the heartstrings. That's just an example of the kind of stuff that has been found. Another piece of footage I saw was of just this egg farm that had dead chickens all around the waters, all around the outside of this huge shed. And, you know, just the scale of things is just... is astonishing.
Wow. Yeah. You hear, we've been hearing some people online making comments like, well, you know, it's better to be drowned. At least they weren't slaughtered, you know, but this sounds pretty horrible.
Right.
What can you say about that?
Absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I've seen a lot of that too. And I feel very uncomfortable about making judgments about the victims and whether they would have been better off dying this way or that way. I mean, certainly a violent death in a slaughterhouse is a horrible thing, but I'm not comfortable as an activist saying that I think it's better that they died this way or that way. The point is that, and the unfortunate thing is that can easily become a distraction. If we start talking about, you know, the best case scenario, or, you know, this is not as bad as that, then we lose sight of the fact that this is still a colossal disgrace, that an industry is allowed to artificially breed animals into this world, to put them in harm's way, to abandon them when a crisis like this hits, and then do it all over again when they recoup on their insurance policies and they just go back into business. And the worst part of this is, I think, or the most maddening part, is that our tax dollars are subsidizing their losses. So I wish people, you know, I think it's an important subject to have in terms of, like, you know, levels of suffering, but I don't want that to be the focus of this. I want to see us focus on putting pressure and holding this industry, these industries accountable for their failure to do what they say they're going to do, which is the narrative is we protect animals and they have good lives and don't worry, you can eat our, you know, consume our products with a clear conscience because, you know, we're treating them well. So we need to hold them accountable, and we need that to be the focus, I think, of our activism.
Thank you for that, Robert. And I think another aspect of this crisis as well is the health crisis to human beings. And Carol has a question for you about that.
Well, you know, you talk about the holding them accountable and for the animals' lives, and absolutely. But there's also the people's lives that are being jeopardized by these factory farms, the sewage from the farms, and that it's already a public health risk the way that that sewage is getting into the water systems. But how much worse is that after a hurricane?
Yeah, it's, you know, if we look at past, what we have is assessments that were done from the last two major hurricanes in that region.
Mm-hmm.
And we can only infer that the, you know, the impact from Florence is going to be even grimmer than what the last two big hurricanes were. That's another thing, is they, what mitigation plan do they really have for protecting human health or communities? Or the environment, for that matter, when they have open lagoons that can easily flood.
Exactly.
And that this is completely legal. There's obviously very little concern with all the, you know, the corporate talk about how much they care, with all that rhetoric of caring for animals and for communities and for human health. But when push comes to shove, they are recklessly irresponsible. And as much as little as they care about the animals, I think the same could be said about their disregard for the environment, for mm-hmm. human health, for vulnerable communities, mm-hmm. and all of that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right, and you had already alluded to the fact that the government is going to be subsidizing these effects on the hurricane and on the factory farms. So it's not going to really turn over our economy when it comes to, like, I guess what's going to happen is all those animals will just be reborn and recreated and re-slaughtered and repackaged for people to eat. Nothing is going to change. However, things could change. Things could be different. As devastating as the effects of this hurricane has been to both animals and farmed animals, it doesn't always have to be this way, and there are possible solutions for the future. So I would love it if you could tell our listeners about, you know, about the way we eat and how we could live a greener and more compassionate lifestyle to avoid these tragedies from happening in the future.
Sure. Well, you know, we're fortunate enough that most of us, at least, unless you live in a food desert and you have very little options, many of us have a lot of products at our disposal. And I mean, for many of us, it's just a matter of reaching for a different place on the store shelf. It's not, you know, yeah, there might be new recipes to learn, but in many cases, it's simply a matter of replacing the animal product with one of these replacement products and just go using the same recipes and the same methods that, you know, you've been using for all your life. So it really doesn't take that much of a shift in thinking. It's, you know, for me, it's, yeah, there's a whole cultural psychological shift that has to take place. But most people tell me that that's not the problem. They actually tell me that the problem is they don't know how to cook, or they don't know what products to buy. And if that's the problem, we're golden because all they need to do is spend maybe a little bit more time in the store and figure out what products they could use to replace the traditional products they've been using. I sense that the psychological cultural barriers to change are much deeper than most of these people realize, but they're claiming most of the time that it's just a matter of learning what to buy.
Yes, and I think that it's, you know, Hurricane Florence has been so awful. It's been so, it has been just devastating to see all the death that's been happening. And as an animal rights activist, on my social media feeds, I'm seeing the pictures of all the farmed animals that are being destroyed, knowing still that that system still is in place and it's still going to continue. But just as a final thought to our listeners who are seeing these, they may be seeing these images as well, what would you like to say to them about supply and demand, and that, you know, if there's no demand for these animals to be raised this way and killed, there will be no supply? What would you like to leave our listeners with on a thought
sure.
like that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's amazing how many people actually ask the question, what would happen to all of these animals if we didn't eat them, or if, you know, if they were let loose, or if we didn't, you know, farm them? And it's astonishing to me and many of you, I'm sure, you know, many of us that are in animal advocacy, that this question is even asked, because what it implies is an ignorance of the fact that breeding is the problem. I mean, we're breeding, you know, these industries purchase their livestock, their animals, from breeders. And the engine of breeding is what supplies, you know, is what makes this industry, the engine of this industry, continue. So what we need to do, I think, is focus on the breeding aspect and say we stop breeding animals and we start solving the problem, because then there's not a new generation of animals coming into this world, or there's a smaller population, and hopefully it continues to dwindle as our demand for these products declines.
Absolutely. Thank you, Robert, for coming on the show today to speak with us about the devastation that Hurricane Florence has left behind. To find out more about Robert's work in farmed animal advocacy, you can visit freeforharm.org. Thanks, Robert. Have a good day.
Thank you so much. You too.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio, broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
Hi there. Now we're going to have some news for you. At first, we're going to start off with something pretty exciting. Los Angeles has banned fur. The new legislation was just passed by a unanimous vote and will become law once it's signed in by the mayor. When the law goes into effect, retailers will have a 2-year phase-in period to rid their fur stock. And this makes actually Los Angeles the largest city in the world to ban the sale of fur. Now, there's been some other cities in its vicinity that have banned it, starting with West Hollywood in 2013, but now we've got the big guy in there. The victory was a success largely thanks to the efforts of animal activists, including in defense of animals and many other people. So the question is, what does this historic move mean for the fur industry? Well, it kind of means that the fur industry is going down. Even London Fashion Week announced its fur-free policy this year. So fur is no longer being viewed as elegant or chic. It's being seen for what it truly is: murdered animals who've endured a life of pure torture and agony. So we want to put a big thank you out to Los Angeles for helping to protect animals, mm-hmm. and showing the world that fur is not cool. Now, there's been a lot of hype about the climate and all of the different things that have been going on. Certainly in BC this year, we've had lots of forest fires, and people are starting to hold a more pessimistic outlook for the future. They're no longer looking forward to life getting better for themselves or for the next generation. Some people are even opting not to have children because they see the world is in a sad state of affairs. But there is an answer that scientists have put forth. They've decided that if we protect a third of the oceans and land by 2030 and half of it by 2050 with a focus on areas of high biodiversity, that we could be saving the planet. Now, this is not just about saving wildlife, it's about saving ourselves. For instance, we need the forests. They're critical for absorbing and storing carbon. We need to have oceans for the oxygen replenish. And right now, what's happening is that there is an agreement, a UN agreement, that the countries have signed on to, saying that they will reduce by 5% and 17%. So that's not quite what we need. So there is a new target that the scientists have set, and they want the governments to step up to the plate in the conference, but in 2020. So we're hoping that that's going to make a difference to our planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And speaking of governments taking action, I want to go back to California, actually, because a couple of things have happened there this week. The city of Berkeley passed a resolution that they will be serving exclusively vegan food in government buildings one day a week out of concern for human health and the environment. So that is something right on California. And also, Governor Jerry Brown has announced that plant-based meals are now officially, it's illegal to not offer vegan meals in California hospitals. So
excellent.
Yes, those are two more great pieces of news out of California.
Great news. Thank you for sharing those news stories, Sinead and Carol.
Our feature interview is with Chris Delforce. He's the director, writer, and editor of the new feature-length film called Dominion, which takes place in Australia but is applicable to the whole world. Dominion explores and exposes the reality behind the six primary facets of human interaction with animals: companion animals, wildlife, scientific research, entertainment, clothing, and food. And it questions the morality and validity of our dominion over the animal kingdom. Chris is here today to speak to us more about the film in advance of the Vancouver premiere, which takes place next week. Hello, Chris, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for coming on the show today to tell us about your new documentary film, Dominion. I watched it last week, and I have to say that this is probably the most inclusive film out there that documents the many various animals that humans regularly exploit for meat, clothing, entertainment, and research in today's world. I understand that this film is a sequel to your 2014 film called Lucent. Can you tell us how the film Dominion came to be, and what is your premier goal for creating this film?
So Lucent mainly focused on the Australian pig farming industry. The next logical step then was to make a film that took a broader view of how animals are used and abused, looking at other species that are treated just as badly as pigs. So we had all this footage from 50 or so piggeries that we'd investigated all over Australia, and we then started expanding that to other types of farms and slaughterhouses as well, trying to fill in this bigger picture. So it was kind of it was 2015 that we officially announced the film and launched a crowdfunding campaign for Dominion, and then that's all come together for a release earlier this year, 2018. We toured it around Australia, and then we did a few screenings in the UK, the US, and Canada as well. We were lucky enough to be able to get some pretty big names on board, like Joaquin Phoenix, Rooney Mara, Sia, Sadie Sink, Kat Von D. This is all thanks to Sean Monson, the creator of Earthlings, coming on board as a co-producer. Once he saw some of the rough cuts of the film, he was really excited to help out.
Well, while the film primarily takes place at factory farms and slaughterhouses in Australia, the practices in farming and slaughter that are exposed in the film are the same that our animal agriculture industries in North America use, and they are known as standard practices. Now, I'd like to talk about a few of these standard practices that our listeners may not be aware of when it comes to creating an animal that is birthed, raised, killed, butchered, and then presented in neat little pieces on a styrofoam tray at the supermarket for consumers to buy. It all starts with artificial insemination, and I had never seen this done before to such an extent as it's explained and showed in the film. I wonder, what are the takeaways that you would like the viewers of this film to know about the artificial insemination process, whether it's done to cows, chickens, or pigs?
I think it's important to recognize that it is a standard part of these industries, and it's such an unnatural, strange process. And you know, when these industries come out and try and say that vegans and the animal rights activists are extreme, I think it's important to remember the artificial insemination process and how extreme and how unnatural it is. It's something that they rely on so heavily, and the fact is that they have to breed these animals. They have to keep producing them over and over again, keep breeding them over and over again to meet demand. And the only way that they can do that is through this unnatural process of artificial insemination. It just shows how sick this whole system is, really.
Yeah, another common thread between the different variety of animals that are farmed and slaughtered and the methods used to kill these animals is that they are supposed to be stunned first before their throats are cut and then they're bled out to die. But as the film shows time after time, the stunning method, whether it be by captive bolt or an electric stun gun, often does not work to render the animal unconscious, and then they go into the slaughter phase while still fully conscious. Can you please tell us more about the stunning and killing process and what you discovered about the inefficiency of this process throughout the filming?
I think the important thing to realize with stunning is that the reason it was invented and utilized in the first place was not about animal welfare. It was just about immobilizing the animal so that the animal is easier to kill, so that they're not thrashing around too much and trying to escape. So it's about making the process easier and safer for workers. It's not necessarily about making sure the animal is insensible to pain. I think it's also important to recognize that these slaughterhouses operate at such high paces. You know, they have to kill a certain number of animals per hour. If one animal goes through not properly stunned, they can't stop. They can't pause the whole system and redo it. They just have to continue on. So it does mean that inevitably a lot of animals are going to end up being killed while fully conscious, or at least partially conscious and able to feel pain. And it's very difficult to tell, really. It's very difficult to know with any certainty that an animal can't feel anything. Even if they can't move, they can just simply be paralyzed, unable to move, but still capable of feeling pain. It's just not really possible to know, and it's quite a frightening thought. I think it just goes to show that there's really no such thing as humane slaughter. You know, even when it's done 100% accurately and as it's meant to be, you just don't know that it's pain-free, and there's always going to be fear in the process as well. There's always going to be some level of pain and suffering, so it can never be humane regardless of how effective the stunning is.
And I want to say too that for people who are buying what is called humane meat, or you know, happy cows in the pasture, they all go to the same slaughterhouse that you showed here in the film.
Absolutely.
So our listeners might be wondering how the footage of all these farming and slaughter practices was obtained. I would guess that 100% of the footage was caught and filmed while undercover. Can you tell us more about this? How many facilities did you film in, and how did you obtain access, if you were allowed to speak about that?
A lot of the footage was captured by basically sneaking into these places at night, recording with handheld cameras on the spot, or installing hidden cameras to capture what goes on during the day when workers don't feel like they're being watched. So that's a large majority of the footage. There's some footage that was obtained by members of our team getting jobs at these facilities, going undercover and wearing hidden cameras on themselves. Then there were a few kind of other little sneaky plans that we had to enact to be able to get certain bits of footage. Basically, we weren't welcome there most of the time, and we weren't allowed to film. You know, these industries go to great lengths to keep what they're doing hidden, keep it secret. So the only way that we're going to get this footage out there is by trespassing, going in under cover of darkness.
And I have to say that often an excuse that people will bring up is that, oh, it's just that one farm or it's just that one slaughterhouse. Can you give our listeners an idea of how many facilities you went into?
Over the 7 years or so that we've been investigating farms and slaughterhouses for Lucent and for this film, we've been into roughly 200 or so facilities across Australia. So I'm not sure how many of those ended up in the final film. But I, you know, from all those visits, it's very clear to me that the footage that we did end up using is very much standard, is very much representative of the entire industry.
And I really appreciated the fact that you used drones to also get perspectives that you, like, we haven't really seen a lot of footage with drone coverage because that's just a technology that it's come out lately. Can you talk a bit about the angles that the drones covered that we would normally not be able to see?
Yeah, I think being able to use drones was such an important thing for us because it does show you that scale and that context that we just couldn't get beforehand. I think people are kind of used to seeing images of animals inside farms, inside a cage, for example, but you don't see the size of that shed. You don't see that that's just one shed of 10 or 20 on the same property. You don't see this the way that they're laid out on the landscape as these kind of frightening identical warehouses. It just gives you such a better impression of the scale of these places and how far removed they are from this idea people still seem to have of the small family-run farm with, you know, the red barn and a few animals here and there. It's just such a different process these days.
And people can drive past these facilities, you know, when you can see them from the road. And I want people to know that in these facilities, there's, like, for example, 40 to 60,000 chickens crammed in, as you showed us in the film. I think that awareness needs to be made for sure of what's happening behind those closed doors. So there's a segment in the film about fishing, and I really appreciate that because often when organizations are trying to expose the animal agriculture industry, the fishing industry is largely unaddressed. And I know that part of that is because it's difficult to get an undercover investigator to get onto boats and obtain the needed footage to expose the industry. With regards to fishing, the film shows us the process of raising farmed fish in sea cages. That's really applicable to us here in British Columbia. And a couple of things that I learned are that because of this intensive confined process of raising fish this way, 50% of the fish are rendered deaf. Also, the high pollution rates in the sea cages leads to low levels of oxygen, which expands the chance of disease. Can you tell us about some points that you would like our listeners to know about with regards to how fish are farmed in our oceans?
Yeah, so it's basically factory farming of fish, and it's something a lot of people don't know about. It's something that we didn't know about at all until we started investigating it, knowing that we wanted to have this segment in the film. There are huge numbers of fish being kept in these cages, and they are very susceptible to disease, susceptible to mass mortality incidents. There have been quite a few in Australia over the last couple of years, some from human error, some from disease. We're seeing, you know, potentially millions of fish dying in a very short space of time because if a disease gets into the farm, it just spreads so quickly. These farms are also extremely damaging to the environment. There's a particular area in Australia called Macquarie Harbour in Tasmania where the three main fish farm companies all have salmon farms in this harbour, and they have polluted it to such an extreme level. You know, the water's just just murky filth, essentially. It's feces and it's uneaten fish food. And it's this World Heritage site that's been almost completely destroyed by fish farming.
Well, based on all the findings in your film and everything that we've covered, which people really need to see the film to see the different farmed animals that each is represented in your film with a chapter, would you agree that animal agriculture is one of the most manipulative things that humans carry out on this earth, from the selective breeding and genetic modification to the artificial insemination, the artificial light in barns, the need for injecting antibiotics, the accelerated growth rate, etc., etc.? People like to eat meat because they think it's normal, natural, and necessary, but isn't this the most abnormal and unnatural way to obtain food in this day and age?
Absolutely, and I think most people would not support it. They just don't realize what's happening. It's hidden from them so well. It's the only reason these industries are able to operate and to operate in the way that they do and on this horrific scale that they operate. They're just not aware. So I think it's really important to raise awareness and to educate people about what's going on. It's the only way that we're going to change any of this.
Yes, and I think that's why it's so important for films like this to get out and to be watched. So I'd like to talk a little bit about fur. This is a subject covered in your film by means of speaking about rabbits, mink, foxes, and dogs. Fur-trimmed coats and jackets are really popular here in Canada, and it's starting to come around to that season where I'm going to be bombarded by them everywhere I go. The few most egregious aspects of the fur industry to me would have to be, first of all, the huge scale of how many small animals are killed for fur, and then the method in which they are killed by means of anal electrocution, which I think has got to be just one of the most awful things a human being can do to another creature. What are the most extraordinary aspects about the fur industry to you, Chris?
It's just, it seems to be heavily unregulated. They seem to be able to get away with doing so much. If you imagine them doing these same things to dogs, most people would be horrified. And of course, they are doing these things to dogs. And people want to think that they're not buying fur from dogs or cats, but often fur from dogs and cats in China is often mislabeled as other animals. And it does end up in places like Canada and in Australia, labeled as the fur of another species. So people are unknowingly wearing the fur of dogs and cats, thinking that they'd never support, you know, that kind of treatment to those animals, but not really sparing a thought for that same treatment applied to other animals. The slaughter methods are quite horrible. There's anal electrocution. There's also gassing. The way that minks are often killed, they're put into a gas chamber or an enclosed box filled with exhaust. And they're put in there, many of them at a time, and they're scrambling around desperate for air. Some of them aren't properly killed by the end of it. And then they'll have their necks broken is usually the common way to finish them off. So it's a very painful process throughout their lives. They're kept in these individual cages and then they're killed in the most brutal way. So it is such a disgusting industry. They try to cut corners wherever they can. Chinese fur farmers, for example, sometimes to cut costs, they'll basically skin dogs alive. It's cheaper and quicker than stunning or killing them first.
So as the key person who documented hundreds of real-life grisly and traumatic scenes in the making of this film, it must have been really hard to take it all in. However, there are some happy stories that came out of this, and that is that some of the tortured animals who you discovered in the farm facilities were rescued, such as a goat and some others. Can you please tell us about these animals who you and your team rescued?
We took every opportunity to rescue as many animals as we could. Over the 7 years that I've been doing this, we've managed to rescue well over 400 animals. So a lot of those are hens from battery farms, from cage egg farms, because those are the easiest to rehome. There's also been quite a number of piglets rescued as well. there was the baby goat as seen in Dominion, and the story of that goat was that they were born in the holding pens of a slaughterhouse, which happens quite regularly because pregnant animals are often sent to slaughter. And so there was this one baby goat there. We saw them on our footage from a camera we put up in a tree. We retrieved the camera, we watched through the footage that same night and realized that there was this baby goat running around who had just been left there in the pens while their mother had been sent to slaughter. And we thought maybe this baby goat is somehow still alive. So we went straight back there. We found that goat and two other babies as well who'd been born in the meantime. So we were able to rescue three of them that night. They then went to a sanctuary and they're now happily living as adult goats. So there have been quite a few stories that have helped to help to make it a bit of an easier process, because so much of the time you have to see the animals in these conditions and just leave them as they are, because you just don't have the capacity to home them. There's only so many sanctuaries around or so many willing homes around, and they're already overrun. So it's quite difficult to have to leave all these animals behind.
But then you save so many, Chris. And what I'm thinking is that this could be a setup for another film, a sequel to Dominion, the happy side of it. Have you thought of that?
I've had a lot of ideas along those lines.
Oh, people would love to see that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Well, we know there's no justification for enslaving animals. As you mentioned near the end of the film, Gandhi has said the greatness of a nation and its moral progress can be judged by the way its animals are treated. So what does seeing in this film how animals are treated, not just in Australia, but also the UK, Canada, Japan, Israel, India, and more countries, have to tell us? What is the key message you would like to leave with our listeners and those who watch the film?
I think it tells us that there's something fundamentally wrong with the way we as humans view not just animals, but any beings that we consider inferior to ourselves. We believe that this superiority we've claimed for ourselves gives us the right to do whatever we please to the inferior for whatever purpose we see fit. And much of the time that's profit. I think this idea has been used to justify all sorts of atrocities throughout history, whether it's white men believing they're superior to black or men believing they're superior to women. This idea of superiority over inferiority has just allowed so many unethical, horrible things to occur. And I think it's no different with animals. And we need to take a step back and see, what are we doing as a species? Is it time to start thinking of another way to view our place on this earth and our interaction with other beings on this earth? I think most people would agree that what we're doing to animals is wrong. If they knew the truth about what we were doing, if they knew what was going on inside farms and slaughterhouses, they wouldn't support it. So I think it's really important that we inform people so they're able to make their own decisions.
I agree with that. And, you know, something that really struck me that was mentioned in the film is that, you know, people don't want to support animal cruelty, but people seem to have this picture, this fantasy in their head that what we're doing to animals, it's okay because it's meant to be, it's normal, natural, and necessary. And then you say we send them to the slaughterhouse and tell ourselves that along the way something humane has happened. And we need to break people out of that dream, out of that fantasy, because it's just not true. And people will know that if they watch your film.
Absolutely. It's something that they've been taught their whole lives. So it's a very difficult idea to grasp that basically everything they know about how animals are raised and slaughtered is basically wrong. This idea that it can be humane, that it can be happy and ethical, is just a result of some extremely good marketing on the part of the industry, and it's not an easy thing to turn that around.
Well, it's going to be changing because of films like Earthlings and now Dominion, and you know, this isn't an easy film to watch. It could
jar a lot of people. It could really get them, I guess it would get them to embrace what reality is. And you say that bearing witness is important, but also self-care. And what I find interesting on your website for the film, you even have a section there for self-care. So could you talk a bit about why it is important to watch the images in this film, but then also practice self-care afterwards?
I think a lot of these images, if you haven't seen anything like this before, they're going, or even if you have, they're going to be quite shocking. They're going to be quite traumatic and difficult to deal with. And we need people to take care of themselves after watching this, because if you just get too burnt out and too depressed and hopeless, you're not going to be of any use to these animals. You're not going to be able to help change this situation. So we want people to know what's going on, but to actually be motivated and inspired to get out there and do everything they can. I think a big part of that, a big part of being a sustainable activist, is knowing how to implement self-care, how to look after yourself, and not spiral down. I think it's just crucial that we're able to keep going and keep doing as much as we can for as long as we can.
Well, thank you, Chris, for coming on the show today to speak with us about your new documentary film called Dominion, which will be making its Vancouver premiere on Wednesday, September 26th at 7 p.m. at UBC Robson Square. If you can't make this free film screening, you can also watch the film online and find out more about it at dominionmovement.com. Thank you so much, Chris. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM, CFRO, Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Animalvoices.org is where you can stream shows or download the shows as podcasts, read our show blog with detailed links, and subscribe via iTunes. Stay in touch with us via our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. You can also send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Please join us on our next show, Friday, September 28th. And Allison, I think you're going to tell us what we've got lined up for that one.
Right. After this live show today, we're all heading down to the press screening of the brand new film called Sharkwater Extinction, which is a follow-up to the critically acclaimed Sharkwater, Rob Stewart's first film. And in this new film, Rob continues his courageous crusade through the oceans across four continents to investigate the corruption behind a multi-billion pirate fishing trade and massive illegal shark fin industry. Now, tragically, as we know, Rob actually drowned in the filming of this in this film last year. So, well, fortunately, we'll be having Rob's longtime friend and part of the production team on the film, Brock Cahill, on next week's show to speak to us more about the film.
Sounds great. So definitely tune in for that next week. Today's Animal Voices show has been brought to you by Edible Planet, a Vancouver-based education campaign and TV series to teach people about the world's most powerful edible plants and the fascinating people who bring them to market. Food is the world's most powerful tool to share the wealth, end chronic illness, regreen the planet, and create lasting world peace today. Now is the time for a plant-based economy, because on this big, beautiful, edible planet, the food we eat can change the world. To end the show today, we're playing Meat is Murder by The Smiths. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Succulent taste of your kind. It's death for no.